Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. We have with us right now a Mr. Paul Sperry. We're going to be talking about crude politics. And I think as you get into the subject, you'll begin to understand what we're really talking about, of course, is the politics of crude oil. Mr. Sperry, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Stan.
Well, let's get just a little of your background. Who are you? How did you happen to be writing on the oil business and what's happening in the Middle East?
Well, my background is primarily with Investors Business Daily, which is a national broadsheet that's headquartered out of Los Angeles, where I cover manufacturing, including the oil industry, as well as economic policy, tax policy, and was the Washington Bureau Chief for a number of years. And now I'm Washington Bureau Chief of WorldNetDaily.com, which is a national, actually an international newspaper online. It's an internet newspaper.
Oh, we know Joseph Farah very well. Knew him when he was at the Sacramento Bee, so we've been with him for a long time.
Sure, and I'm a Hoover Institution fellow.
All right,
media,
fine.
Media fellow.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, then, of course, you're working then full-time for WorldNet Daily?
That's right. This is my first book.
All right, fine. Now, of course, as we begin looking at what's happened in the Middle East, we've been told we went to war there because of other weapons of mass destruction. We've been told we went to war there because we were concerned because Saddam Hussein might give those weapons to Osama bin Laden, or he might attack New York, or he might change the currency to the euro, or we went there to protect the Jews. And there's all sorts of reasons that are given as to why we went to war in the Middle East. And we're going to be talking with Paul about what his views are, and certainly the part that the oil and the presence of the massive oil deposits in the Middle East play in that. Now, how important do you think oil was in the decision to attack the Middle East?
In Iraq, a large part, and crude politics also it does explain why Bush took this, like you said, a sharp left turn from the war against al-Qaeda into Iraq. In large part, Iraq was a wag-the-dog political response to the failure in Afghanistan, and not any bin Laden escape there in December 2001, and not any strategic response to 9/11. Bush wanted to change the subject, and he started talking about Saddam Hussein so he wouldn't have to talk about Osama bin Laden escaping. But it was also about oil, namely privatizing the prized Iraqi oil fields that U.S. oil donors such as Chevron have been locked out of since the first Gulf War.
Well, in other words, what you're suggesting is we're actually going to seize these from the Iraqi government, not pay them, and simply put our corporations in there, or have our corporations pay some sort of a stipend to the Iraqis for the oil we're going to be taking?
No, actually, what they're planning on doing is having the Iraqi government maintain a nominal majority stake in the national oil company and have it privatize out the rest to private investors at 49%, and that will allow U.S. oil companies, primarily like Chevron Texaco, which is Condi Rice's old haunt. She was a longtime director, and they named an oil tanker after her. They've already actually gotten a contract to ship out on tankers oil out of the Gulf, out of Iraq.
All right, we're going to have to just bring another station on here in just a moment. So hang right on there, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Paul Sperry, and he, of course, has been with Investors Daily, a spreadsheet telling people about what's happening. He's done that for many years, but now, of course, he's a correspondent for WorldNet Daily and Joseph Farah, and, of course, evaluating what's really going on in the world. We're going to be talking about his new book, Crude Politics, which goes into the background of what's happening as far as the crude oil in the Middle East. And, of course, we were, of course, led to believe that it was going to be a very easy thing. We were going to go in, going to take over the country. We were going to get the oil wells working again. We were going to begin exporting oil. We were going to have all that money we could use to rebuild Iraq instead of it being siphoned off by Saddam Hussein. It would go into, of course, the $100 or more billion it's going to take to get this country back in shape. So why don't you pick up the story there, Paul? Where are we? What's happening as far as the Middle East oil is concerned? And how much motive was there for going to war in the Middle East? Actually, the tremendous supplies of oil that there in Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq's oil fields are really the prize. That's the bonanza. And it's even cheaper to produce that oil because it's sweet crude and it's very shallow. I mean, it's plunk a straw down the ground practically and come up with a gusher, even cheaper by half than producing Saudi oil, which is just the greatest. Saudi oil, by the way, isn't sweet, so I mean this is the prize. But the refineries and the oil wells are so in disrepair, and now of course we have sabotage of the pipelines and other facilities that the Iraq is really going to need outside capital to get these things online. And that's going to be the end result, is that the oil company, the Iraqi National Oil Company, will be privatized, probably with the majority stake being maintained and retained by the Iraqi government, which whatever it is. And of course, the end result of any Iraqi government will be a client government of the U.S. and that's one of the main reasons we don't want the French and the Russians and the UN butting in on regime change right at this point. But
well, we keep talking about we want a democracy, but we don't let them appoint the people that they want. We won't let them hold elections. We appoint a representative group of people who don't represent Iraq at all. They represent American interests, just as this happened with Karzai over there.
Karzai
over in Afghanistan. You know, I wonder if anybody honestly believes that this hypocrisy is really about representative government and really questions the fact that so much of this really has to do with we're going to run it the way we want to run it, and we're going to put our people in control, and if you get in our way, you're in real trouble. In fact, you know, this last weekend, there was a terrible bombing over there, and the man who may very well have been able to have united all of Iraq, this Shiite Muslim who, apparently had lost most of the members of his family because of persecution from Saddam Hussein, and he's suddenly blown up by a group of Wahhabis. But of course, how did they get in there? Why weren't we guarding this man who really was, in many respects, the leader of all of the Shia Muslims, which make up at least 60% of the population? Why weren't we guarding him and protecting his life?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't think we were prepared for such desperate measures and it has not been yet determined that Al Qaeda, anyone affiliated with Al Qaeda, actually committed the terrorism. Two, we don't know if they were the culprits that they actually planned and masterminded the hit in the Jaf. Actually, there's a document that Saddam Hussein put out in January before the war to his intelligence services that specifically told his troops and his intelligence folks to melt back into the civilian population and to target Najaf and also to assassinate imams, Shiite imams. And I have a copy of that document. It was the translation of it and the authenticity of it was confirmed by a former lieutenant army colonel who is a translator for Schwarzkopf. And so I think that's actually that Saddam Hussein's calling the shots on this, and this guy was cooperating with the U.S. as a Shiite. Of course, Saddam Hussein's regime was Sunni. Whether or not they got help from anyone affiliated with Al Qaeda or some Arabs from Saudi, that remains to be seen. It's quite possible, but I think ultimately the person calling the shots is Saddam Hussein. And to answer your previous question on liberation, you're exactly right. They don't want to let the Iraqi people actually vote for the unfettered without any interference on it, because what they'll end up voting for is an Islamic government, a Sharia, governed by Sharia law, like they had pretty much under the Taliban. And we will not let that happen, and so there is no true liberation or democracy of the Iraqi people. In fact, the only thing that probably end up being liberated in Iraq, just like in Afghanistan, is UN sanctions, economic sanctions against outside foreign investment, including U.S. oil producers.
Well, I think this is going to create tremendous hostility among the Arabs. Certainly, the only reason that Mubarak is still in power in Egypt after we've given them some $60 billion is because of American aid. I mean, if they had a free election there, why he would be deposed? The same thing is true in Algeria. The same thing is true in Pakistan. The same thing is true in Afghanistan. The same thing is true in Turkey. You know, we are keeping people who are not the selection of the people in power all the time talking about democracy. The people in the United States have no idea what this is all about. But don't you think the people over there really understand that we're putting in people that we can control into political office?
Well, the fellow who's in charge of regime change, or at least brokering it in Kabul, in Baghdad, is the same guy who Bush signed to do the same in Kabul back in right after the September 11th attacks.
And is that Bremer or?
Well, no. It's the guy who's the behind-the-scenes operator. Okay. Actually, he's the protagonist of my book.
All right, fine. Well, what is
his name is Zalmay Khalilzad. He's not exactly a household name, even here in Washington, and the White House likes it that way.
Why don't you tell our listeners what your book covers and what they're going to learn when they get your book, Crude Politics?
Well, as you know, Stan, we're coming up on the second anniversary of the September 11th al-Qaeda attacks. And Crude Politics explains why Osama bin Laden is still a threat to America 2 years after he attacked us and Bush promised to bring him to justice dead or alive. It's because this administration focused on regime change, first in Afghanistan and Kabul and now in Baghdad, and that expanded mission has diverted resources from the hunt for bin Laden and his top henchmen, by the way. This is Dr. Zawahiri and Al-Adel. And the underlying reason they focus on regime change is because it lifted U.N. sanctions on U.S. oil investment in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in both cases, they follow the playbook of this former oil lobbyist who brokered regime change in both those places. And his name is Zalmay Khalilzad. And this is a very shadowy, behind-the-scenes operator. He's highly influential and is one of Bush's top war advisors in the White House. Interestingly enough, he gets no mention in Bob Woodward's book on the war. I don't know if you saw that. It's like a 360-page tome called Bush at War, but there's actually no mention, not even in the index. But readers will become well acquainted with Mr. Khalilzad in my book.
All right, fine. Well, then I assume he is an Arab from the name. And
he's a Muslim, but he's a moderate Muslim. He's an Afghan native. Very few people know of him, but boy, I tell you, this guy is very influential.
Well, now, is he tied into the oil companies?
What's that?
Is he tied in the oil companies?
He was an energy consultant throughout the 90s. In fact, he lobbied for Unocal, which originally proposed those trans-Afghanistan pipelines that go from the Caspian through Afghanistan and Pakistan out to Asia, the hot markets in Asia, the Caspian producers, see, that oil up there is really locked, and also the gas reserves. You've got to have pipelines to get it out to market, and the pipelines traditionally have gone to the west, to Europe, and they want to get them to Asia. Boy, you got to go through the Red Sea all the way down. They could get those things through Afghanistan. It's so much more profitable, and that's what they've been trying to do. But the Taliban, you see, blocked those pipelines, both oil and gas. And now that President Bush has changed the regime in Kabul, Afghanistan, those, at least the gas pipeline, is on the fast track now. Fortunately, the hunt for Osama bin Laden is not on the fast track.
Well, of course,
and they're still vulnerable in this country to another major attack while he's still alive to give the next order.
Well, of course, the thing that bothers me is that there was talk, and perhaps you would know more about this than I would, that we were planning on using force against Afghanistan even before the September 11th attack, because the Taliban were reluctant to give us the right of way to run the pipeline across their country. Is there any truth to that?
I dismiss those theories. I think you're talking about the one posited put forth by the two French journalists.
That's right. There's a Niaz Niak, who was the Pakistani foreign minister, who said he was told in July.
Yeah, that's what they based it.
Right, and that we will pave your streets with gold, or we'll pave them with carpet bombs. Which do you want?
That's the quote, right? I'm not doubting that this transpired, or this person said this quote, incendiary quote or whatever, but the theory is easy to refute. And that is, the FBI documents I looked at show Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker, the ringleader, enrolled in flight school in June of 2000, before Bush even was in office. So the 9/11 plot was underway before Bush was president. So how could Bush have provoked an attack to use as a pretext to go into Afghanistan to change out the Taliban and get the pipeline? See, it just doesn't follow.
All right, fine. So you feel that the attack was planned long, long before. Where was Mohammed Atta in flight school at that time, do you recall?
He was originally enrolled down in Florida, and also looked into schools in Arizona. I believe it was June 3rd, but that's all documented in my book.
All right, well, we'll look forward to getting it, because I've talked to the woman who was actually in charge of the flight school in Norman, Oklahoma. And, of course, she told me that although she didn't remember Mohammed Atta being there, the FBI knew all about it 2 weeks after the attack, told her when Mohammed Atta had been to their flight school, where he had stayed in Norman, Oklahoma. They seemed to have an awful lot of information on a man that they didn't even know existed, or they tell us they really didn't know he existed prior to that attack.
Well, it's possible that they did a lot of double time to get that information after the attacks. She's not with the FBI, so maybe she was out of the loop, and they got a hold of that. But another theory that's been pretty popular out there is that President Bush, I think that's what you're alluding to, is that President Bush or the administration knew about 9/11, had intelligence on it, specifics, and let it happen anyway. Same reason to have a pretext to get those pipelines through. That's just as easy to refute. Donald Rumsfeld was in the Pentagon when the plane was hit. He even, as you recall, helped move bodies. And Bush's Solicitor General's wife, Barbara Olson, was in the plane. And Bush's own wife, few people know this, was on Capitol Hill at the time. Now, the fourth plane was headed for the Capitol, as we now know. That was the fourth target, not the White House. It was the Capitol. So you'd think that the defense secretary, the lawyer who won Bush's election case before the Supreme Court, and the first lady would all be in on the conspiracy, or at least get some kind of advance warning. Apparently, if you believe that conspiracy theory, they didn't get the memo that day.
All right, so you feel that then there was absolutely no prior knowledge of the attack. It really took them as much as...
they were just as shocked as all of us. But what happened was, when they gathered around the war table in the Situation Room, they realized they had a golden opportunity here to do more than just take out Bin Laden.
Well, certainly.
And that is to open up these new oil frontiers, sure.
In other words, they certainly, even on the first day or so, were thinking already of going to war with Iraq.
That was Wolfowitz and the neocons who were thinking that. They were actually told to cool their heels by the non-pro-Israel or the non-Jewish folks in the White House, which were Rice, Powell, Rich Armitage, who were also part of the war planners, let's see, Cheney himself. Hey, those guys, Wolfowitz, hey, cool your heels, And it wasn't until Bin Laden escaped that the White House agreed to set loose those guys like Wolfowitz, because they needed to change the subject from Bin Laden.
All right, fine. We'll be back here.
That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment or two with Paul Sperry at here. And, of course, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. His book is Crude Politics. It'll be coming out, I think, tomorrow or the next day. And so, we'll be right
out
back
here. Barnes & Noble tomorrow.
Okay, fine.
Borders and all that.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. Recently, a medical journal reported on the world's first proven remedy for the common cold, allicin, the active ingredient in garlic. During winter months, a pure allicin garlic extract reduced the risk of the common cold by 50%. This was demonstrated in a double-blind, placebo-controlled study, science's highest measure of effectiveness. Where do you get pure allicin? You won't find it in store-bought garlic pills, but you'll find it in Alamex. Alamex provides the equivalent of 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. Where do you get Alamex? Dial this number now, 866-405-4000. Learn more about Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just tell you about a couple of the other items we carry here. One of them certainly would be the Big Berkey water fillers and of course, the Berkey Life water fillers. And if you would like to have something that will change the taste of your water, if you don't like the taste of the water, if you're concerned that there may be bacteria, Cryptos viridium, some of the other things in there, certainly many of the heavy metals, some of the other things that you really wouldn't want to be taking the pesticides, why, certainly the Big Berkey will do a good job of filtering all of those things out. It's a standard filter that's been used by missionaries throughout the world for the better part of 150 years. Now, it's made of stainless steel. The water goes through ceramic filters. It then, of course, goes through activated charcoal and just comes out the bottom. Now, of course, this is an excellent, excellent and time-proven water system. They're $239. They are available in every state of the Union but California and Iowa. However, there is a water filter that is available in California. It's called the Berkey Light. It's made of Lexan, which you make bulletproof glass out of, so it's transparent, so you can actually see the water level. And then, of course, the filters are black Berkey filters, and, of course, they're a different composition, but they do even a better job than the traditional ceramic filters, and, of course, they do a great job of taking out the bacteria and the heavy metals and the pesticides, and of course, they will not take out fluoride. They won't take it out well. If you need to get fluoride out of your water, you need to get the special pulse filters. Have to be replaced about every 6 or 8 months. But you can go to our website at radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com, and see both the Big Berkey and, of course, the Berkey Life water filters. You can, of course, order them by calling 1-800-544-8927. Now, the Berkey Light is available in every state but Iowa. It's $199. If you buy either one, you get a four-tape set or a video we've produced, and you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Paul Sperry, and his book is Crude Politics, and we're talking about, of course, the politics of oil in the Middle East. So you pick up the story from there, Paul, and let's get on into where oil fits into this. Your feeling is that we intend to turn much of the major oil over there over to our major oil companies. They'll be working them with a nationalized Iraqi oil company. Is that it?
Say that again. We're going to be working with it.
Well, now who is going to control the oil?
Well, the Iraqi. They'll nominally the Iraqi government, but I mean it'll be the U.S. puppet government. It de facto will be controlling it, but will end up giving more than likely 49% stake to private investors outside, foreign investors, which we really have to at this point, anyways, to bring in the capital to get those oil refineries and wells back up online.
Well, now, what about the British? What about the Dutch Shell? What about other countries that want, of course, get some of that oil as well?
I think they'll have a hard time unless there's a change in this administration. If there is, they'll be allowed to share in it, but they'll definitely buy for it. But I think that the plum stuff is going to go to donors of the Bush administration.
But isn't that, of course, immoral and illegal?
Well, if you can prove a quid pro quo, it sure is illegal.
Well, of course, we see...
It sure smacks of it throughout, also what's going on in the Caspian region in regards to Afghanistan. By the way, I just remembered, I wanted to clarify something we talked about earlier about where Muhammad Atta first enrolled in flight school. I checked my book, and he actually visited the flight school in Norman, Oklahoma. He didn't actually enroll. He did enroll in July 2000 in Venice, Florida,
right,
at the Huffington Aviation facility there.
Right, and I think you're absolutely right, because the lady at Norman didn't even remember he was there, but the FBI knew he'd been there. So they had at least 2 weeks after the attack a great deal of information.
They had some time to investigate.
Right. And of course, but now as we begin looking at the Middle East, we seem to see, for instance, Halliburton, which of course Dick Cheney had worked for, and my understanding is he's still getting a so-called deferred salary from Halliburton, and they've been given contracts worth several billion dollars, perhaps even more than that, on non-competitive bids. That certainly smacks of cronyism, doesn't it?
It's crony capitalism. That's what this administration is engaged in right now, and it's war profiteering. Halliburton has actually already received $705 million for oil field rehab work.
Now, have they done
in Iraq?
Have they done that work there?
No, they've already been allotted that money through their contract is for $1.8 billion, I believe. Some have speculated it's more than that, but that's all that's we've been able to glean from the Army Corps of Engineer.
All right, now of course there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, repairing those oil lines, which seem to be getting blown up on a regular basis. So is Halliburton repairing those? Are they putting in new wells? Are they putting in new equipment? Or what are they really doing for their money that these several billion dollars they're going to be getting?
Well, they specialize in pipelines. They also they're big big presence in Kazakhstan as well. And Kazakhstan wants to get that oil through, the biggest investor there in terms of producing oil and gas is Chevron Texaco, which is Condi Rice's old outfit.
Speaking of Condoleezza Rice,
she's the national security advisor. By the way, this fellow Zal is the president fondly called him. Zalmay Khalilzad, he's the protagonist in my book. He works directly under Condoleezza Rice.
And of course, then he is the one who's sort of doling out the oil contracts, the goodies to all the corporations?
No. He could be involved in that, but what he's primarily doing is he's the person who has groomed the puppets. This is Hamid Karzai, and now we're going to probably see more than likely Ahmad Chalabi, or a surrogate of his, go in and replace Saddam Hussein. Eventually, as things die down there.
Well, now, of course, Chalabi really doesn't seem to have any support at all. He hasn't been in Iraq for many years. We brought him in with... trained a big army for him, I don't know, a couple of hundred men, and we're financing him, and yet, of course, where is his point among the Iraqi people?
Well, he's not trusted by the masses, but he represents interests in London and in New York and in Washington, and he's the one they tapped and they groomed all along, and he'll end up, if not the president there, other position there that's pretty high up. He's, by the way, as I reveal in my book, he's actually tied to oil interests going way back in Iraq through the oil ministries. So he's very well connected in the oil industry as well. Just as Hamid Karzai worked for Unocal once on those pipelines back last decade with Zalmay Khalilzad, and as I reveal in my book...
Yeah, we're going to have to cut right, right, be sure. Right back.
have four tapes out on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for the JFK assassination date.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about a couple of other items that we carry. Certainly one of them would be Miracle 2 soap products, and of course we can't make any medical claims for them, but I will tell you that the people who use them make all sorts of claims about how it helps rashes and acne and all those things, and of course I know that some people claim it seems to help them as far as their heartburn, and other people say it helps their lower intestinal tract. That's the neutralizer, of course. It's the gel that, of course, is so great for the rashes and for the acne. And, of course, then, of course, there's a regular soap, and there's a moisturizing soap, and there's a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizing solution. All we can do is suggest, if you'd like to try them, why, I hope you'll be as happy as the other people who've actually gotten them from us. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for Miracle 2 soap products. I think you'll be happy if you do. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we mentioned we carry the Phonopoly sets. Phonopoly is a board game. It's played like Monopoly, but it'll teach you how to spell and pronounce words and, of course, read phonetically. And, of course, there are 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and about 16 hours. You can undo everything that was done to you in school as far as preventing you from learning how to read and read properly. Phonics is the key to reading. They know that. That's why they don't teach it. So if you'd like to find out about Phonopoly, give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, when you get the Phonopoly set, you'll get not only the 5 board games, 2 bonus games, but we throw in a couple of books as well to go into the background of the educational system and why America has the lowest SAT scores in the world today. It's not by accident. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Paul Sperry. We're going to be talking about his book, which is coming out very, very soon. It's called Crude Politics. It goes into the oil and, of course, what's happening over in the Middle East, and the fact that, of course, that you call this cronyism. They call it certainly oil cronyism.
I call it crony capitalism.
Crony capitalism, okay.
Now, free market conservatives do not be fooled. This is not capitalism, and these are not real capitalists. They're crony capitalists who suck at the bosom of big government for their profits, and taxpayers pay for their fat contracts and pick up the tab for their war profiteering in Afghanistan and now in Iraq, and young soldiers pay with their lives.
And I think it's really so interesting that, I mean, here we have Dick Cheney, who never held a good job in all of his life outside of government, and suddenly he leaves government in 1992, and he becomes CEO of Halliburton, and of course he makes $30 or $40 or $50 million, something like that,
right.
And then he comes in as vice president, and what do we find but Halliburton, his old company, is getting all of these non-competitive bids. Now, we're supposed to have competition in bids, so we get the best work for the least money, of course, unless you're Halliburton Oil, and then of course you're in a different status. And where is the outcry from the conservative Republicans, the people who really believe in the free enterprise system? That is deafening in its
That's silent. A good point. I mean, like I said, there's no way to make money in the America that I know and love. And it's, it's how you make money in this country is through great inventions and ideas in the marketplace. And someone, like you said, like Cheney, who doesn't have any, private sector really experience, definitely not running a big company like that, that he was put in that position because he had access. And boy, does he have access now, and he's just sending all sorts of plums back. By the way, this shows just how close and cozy the Bush-Cheney oil family is. Did you know that the former CEO of Chevron, Texaco, who was sat on the board with Condoleezza Rice, is now an outside director for Halliburton? And he sits on the board with one Lawrence Eagleburger. Now, Eagleburger was another old Bush hand. He was the Secretary of State for the first, for Bush Sr. He was one of the loudest pushers for war in Iraq. And they're on the Halliburton board right now. I mean, it's so thick that the political and the corporate connections that I go through in this book. I mean, I got to say, it is fascinating to some degree, just how interconnected these folks are. But at the same time, it's very disturbing for the reasons we just talked about. This is not the way it's supposed to work.
Well, of course,
some people.
But our boys are getting killed over there.
Yes,
and a war of attrition, both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And these people are making tremendous profits on it. And they brought them into these wars. And we could seriously question the wisdom of either one of those. After all, the Afghans were willing to turn Osama bin Laden over to a third country, or they were willing to give us to us if we'd show them the evidence, or if they would even have just sent them out of the country. And instead of doing that, we said, oh, no, we want every member of Al-Qaeda, and we're going to go to war because you're not going to give them to us. We didn't even tell who we wanted.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. We had a number of opportunities. Bush turned them down to get him. And, you know, you kill the head, you kill the body. But what we ended up doing was just scattering Al-Qaeda terrorists and without killing the queen over there. Now they've regrouped, and they're just as angry and strong as ever, and we're still vulnerable to attack.
Well, you certainly you don't stick your finger into a beehive, that's for sure.
No, that's what we ended up doing, because we wanted the Bush administration got very ambitious, and they wanted to focus on regime change rather than taking out, decapitating Al-Qaeda as they should have. And, you know, that really threw a lot of my sources at CENTCOM and also special forces at the Pentagon. They could not understand why we were focusing on regime change, the Taliban, and using local Afghan proxies do the fighting in Afghanistan, and the reason was they were following this fellow Zalmay Khalilzad's blueprint.
All right, now he is the person who's designed this whole incredible scenario we're following?
They followed his playbook to the page, to the letter. I mean, even down to lifting, and I've got his policy white paper on replacing the Taliban. It's revealed in Crude Politics for the first time. He actually proposed installing himself as Afghan envoy. I mean, Bush did that. Bush lifted the Pressler Amendment and other sanctions on Pakistan to get Musharraf on board the pipelines. And sure enough, boom, 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 after we got rid of the Taliban, then he's cutting deals with Hamid Karzai on the pipelines, and then Bush is getting involved. He's throwing diplomats to monitor the deals and riding herd on them. He even personally got involved in it back last September. This is stuff that all happened under the radar while Bush was, pumping up his chest and acting like Clint Eastwood, saying, "I'm so tough on terrorists, and we got them on the run," and all this stuff.
We're going to get them dead or alive, right?
Meantime, he was busy with this frenetic deal-making and everything behind the scenes, and that's all revealed in this book. It really turns your stomach. Most people don't really care right now. They think that bin Laden can't top September 11th, nothing to worry about, he's fatigued or whatever, he's in a cave, whatever they've been led to believe. But they will care if he, God forbid, strikes us again. About what was really going on behind the scenes of this war.
But, of course, the Al-Qaeda is hitting places all over the world. I mean, there was a couple of big explosions in India just a couple of days ago. The attacks in Southeast Asia, they are attacking everywhere in the world. Fortunately, they're not attacking the United States, but certainly, you know, and they have to be getting funding from someplace. You don't run a terrorist operation without somebody giving you the money to finance the terrorists, the training to train the terrorists, and the explosives to use to blow up things. So, and everything points that this is coming from Saudi Arabia. What's
yeah,
your thoughts
great,
on that?
Great. Yeah, that's a great segue to what I wanted to talk about
right.
next was in crude politics. Moreover, I also explain why Bush continues to cover for the Saudis. For one, they're jockeying to be partners in the Trans-Afghanistan pipelines. Very, very few people know that, but it's through Delta Oil. But the main reason that Bush allowed Osama bin Laden's relatives to be whisked out of the country after 9/11 is the same reason he won't declassify those 28 pages on Saudi in the 9/11 report. And that's his old family friend, Saudi Prince Bandar, or Bandar Bush, as he's fondly known within the Bush clan when he visits Kenneth Bunkport. By the way, he's going to visit up there with Bush Sr. soon here. He and the Bushes go way back, and it was Bandar who lobbied the White House to spirit the bin Ladens out of the country. And it was Bandar and his wife, whose brother, by the way, is the former Saudi intelligence chief who for years protected bin Laden, who are cited in the 9/11 report as possible co-conspirators. And what's more, it's a fact, not a rumor, that Bush's father and old pal James Baker III, you know, the lawyer who helped Bush with his Florida election crisis, personally have done business with the bin Laden family right up to the day of the 9/11 attacks. And Baker's law firm in Houston is now defending, believe it or not, defending the Saudi defense minister against the $1 trillion lawsuit brought by the families of 9/11 victims.
Is that Baker and Hoyt, is it?
No, Baker and Bott.
Baker and Bott, okay.
In crude politics, I produce a secret letter between a top Bush administration official and a Saudi official that reveals just the alarming degree of access and clout that the royal family has with this administration.
Well, you know, if indeed they are behind Al-Qaeda and the administration is covering for them, that is criminal activity. I mean, if you are covering for criminals, then, of course, you are yourself a criminal.
The only thing I can think of is that that Bandar Bush, you know, Prince Bandar, has got them so snowed into believing that they do play a great double game. But because the Bushes are so personally connected to the royal family, I think they're willing to give them the benefit of the doubt to the very end.
But
I'm not willing to go yet there. But I will give you that it's become painfully obvious that our commander-in-chief has a serious conflict of interest in effectively prosecuting this war on Al-Qaeda because of his oil connections, particularly with the Saudi royal family.
Well, I mean, there's no question that the Saudis financed Al-Qaeda before 9/11, that 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia.
Evidence they still are.
Right, and of course they're still financing Al-Qaeda. So, you know, somebody's putting up the money for these bombings all throughout the world, and boy, you know, boy, we're going to track them down, we're going to get them dead and alive, and then we're not doing anything about the real source of the funding, which is Saudi Arabia. And where is the outcry from the American people? This is what disturbs me.
Where's the outcry from the Republican Party? I mean, that's what's really disturbing. I mean, they're guilty of the same situational ethics that they accused the Clinton apologists of during Chinagate and even the lying under oath and all that. It's very disturbing. They should be mad as hell. And that's coming from somebody who voted for Bush.
Right.
You know, truth is, if the Bush doctrine were applied evenly and apolitically, which it is not, as you know, we would count both Saudi Arabia and Pakistan among our enemies, not allies. As I document in crude politics, almost every terrorist act against the U.S. or its interests abroad has had a Pakistani connection, and that includes 9/11, and there is far more evidence linking Riyadh in Saudi, the Saudi capital, to Al-Qaeda and 9/11 in Baghdad, yet both Pakistan and Saudi continue to enjoy immunity from prosecution in this war by this administration.
Well, I am really looking forward to reading your book. It's Crude Politics. You say it'll be out tomorrow?
Yeah, it'll be in all the major bookstores, you know, from Barnes & Noble, Borders, Crown Books, all that. It debuts out. It's released.
All right, fine. I will be calling tomorrow to get my copy. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're listening to us from out across the country, our guest is Paul Sperry. His book is, of course, Crude Politics, and going into, of course, this whole problem as far as crony capitalism, and of course the Saudis being behind so much of what's going on. And of course, we talk a good game, you wonder why we can't find Osama bin Laden, you wonder why we can't stop the terrorism, you wonder why with all of the things we have available, the Al-Qaeda is still operating throughout the world, and where's the money coming from? And I think we could stop it tomorrow. If we really put the brakes on Saudi funding. Well, what is your solution to the problem other than to expose the fact that we have a real cancer in America?
Well, we're stretched so thin now, it's hard, because what Bush has done is he's diverted resources. You know, that's in the form of troops, intelligence assets, and Arabic translators, so important in terms of intelligence, human intelligence, to Iraq. We're so bogged down there, you know, it's hard to really come up with some type of exit strategy at this point. He's really screwed up. I mean, this is awful. But what we need to do, and we might not have the troops to do it, is we need to take a bunch of troops, you know, 1, 2, 3 divisions, and just go into those badlands in Pakistan and ferret out bin Laden. The problem is, crude politics also explains this, you know, why Bush is appeasing Pakistan. He's lifted economic sanctions and pledged billions more in aid, even when Pakistani President Musharraf, has barred our military from hunting down bin Laden in northern Pakistan. Our troops, Stan, can't even cross the Afghan border when attacked by marauding al-Qaeda fighters. And this is something that my military sources have been, just griping about for months and months and months that this is taking place.
So like
they can't even go across. When those guys come across into Afghanistan, hit them, they have to stop at the border. And President Bush has agreed to this.
It's sort of like Cambodia all over again, then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, one reason is Pakistan's president, this strong man, military strongman, who came to power in a coup, and all these sanctions against him, and also on his nuclear weapons program, or Pakistan's program, which have all been lifted by Bush, he agreed to sign a deal with U.S. puppet Hamid Karzai in Kabul, who's also a one-time energy consultant. In INS records I obtained show he was no stranger to Washington as he was depicted. You know, this guy just came out of nowhere, obscurity, you know, this tribal guy came out and took over as president and everything. That wasn't the reality at all. I mean, this guy was an old insider. But anyways, they signed this deal to develop the Trans-Afghanistan Pipeline, or TAP, as they call it, which continues on through Pakistan. The Taliban, which Musharraf backed, was blocking its development, and the multi-billion-dollar gas pipeline is now on the fast track, as I said, but you know, unlike the hunt for bin Laden. And this huge project is part of the planned energy corridor called the New Silk Road, which years has been on the wish list to push Republicans and their Caspian-producing donors.
All right, now this will then cross Afghanistan, Pakistan, down to the Arabian Sea?
That's the oil pipeline.
Right,
the gas
right.
pipeline comes down through Herat, Kandahar, crosses over the border, Kedah, and then it connects to a grid in Multan, and then there's an extension, a proposed extension on that for an additional $600 million that goes to India. Now, that's where it's being disputed right now, whether or not to make that because of the tensions between India and Pakistan. But the end user would be ideal for that thing to be viable if India signs on to it because, of course, they have such a huge demand for energy and specifically natural gas. But this thing is going to happen with or without India. It's already on the fast track. The Asian Development Bank is about to produce a feasibility study, and as soon as that's done, then they're going to get a consortium, and then it's off to the races.
All right, fine. So everything is underway then to exploit the oil over there.
And exploit a tragedy, quite frankly.
Now, why do you say a tragedy?
Exploit the 9/11 tragedy.
Oh, okay, exploit the... Yeah. Yeah, certainly, I agree with you totally. And that is, I think, what people don't understand, is they're using this for their own purposes. And instead of going after Osama bin Laden and getting the people who financed him, they're doing everything they can to avoid getting Osama bin Laden. And I don't really think they're trying very hard from what I've been able to glean. Have you ever had a feeling that maybe we're not trying as hard as we might to get Osama?
This is what's scary. Bush... Musharraf is just as good as the Saudis at playing the double game with this administration. Bush is pretty much leaving it up to Musharraf's military to hunt down bin Laden in northern Pakistan. The Pakistani military, the problem with that is the Pakistani military reveres Osama bin Laden. He is a hero to them because he trained and financed the jihadi fighters in Kashmir. The number one thing, the ISI, which is the intelligence arm of the Pakistani military, they basically run the whole country, ISI. Their number one on their agenda is taking all of Kashmir. That's the number one priority in Pakistan. And they will be damned if they're going to take out bin Laden. They're not going to turn him over. They will continue to protect him.
Well, Paul, we're out of time. I hope we can get you back on again to one of the other programs because we've just sort of scratched the surface. But fascinating book, and I'm going to get a copy, and we'll have Paul back on again. Thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
It was a pleasure. Happy Labor Day.
And you too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. And this is Dr. Stan. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this afternoon's program. And to all of you out there, well, it's Labor Day. I wish you were calling in, but I at least hope a few of you are listening. This is a very important program.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me tell you about a couple of the other things we carry. First of all, we hope that many of you out there will seriously consider setting up an Institute of the Constitution in your community, in your church, in your area, to begin to teach people about America's Christian heritage. America was formed as a Christian nation. Now, the Supreme Court on four separate occasions held that. Certainly every one of the states, I think, maybe it was 11 of the 13 states, had a state religion at the time when the First Amendment was written up and was accepted. Treaty of 1783 mentioned the Trinity. The Treaty of 1789 with Russia mentioned the Trinity. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo in 1848 talked about God, and nobody questioned we were a Christian nation. Of course, until recently, when, of course, the Masonic-controlled Supreme Court changed the structure of our society and undermined the very fabric of our heritage. Well, what you need to do, of course, is set up an Institute of the Constitution. Call 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And then, of course, if you're struggling with your health care costs and you'd like to learn about a Christian health cost sharing program. A Christian health cost sharing program. It's called MediShare. That's MediShare. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's called MediShare, and we hope that many of you will decide to do that. And then, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today.
Our four-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you haven't got our four-tape set on the Kennedy assassination, we hope many of you will want to get that. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We've got all sorts of fascinating books on the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, if you can understand that they lied to us about that, then we shouldn't be surprised that they're lying to us about what happened on 9/11, about Pearl Harbor, about so many other things. And of course, it is because the Council on Foreign Relations controls our media, controls our State Department, controls our educational system, and they interlock with the great tax-exempt foundations and the central bankers, and that's what the Brotherhood of Darkness is all about. Because the common denominator behind all of these things is the occult. And these are the people who hate Christianity, who, of course, worship a different God. And once you understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, then things really begin to make sense. Otherwise, you can't understand why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. It was simply because the Masons controlled the Supreme Court totally from 1941 to 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1, and then, of course, subsequently other Masonic presidents, and there have been at least three of them since that time, appointed people to the Supreme Court who hate God and hate our Christian heritage. Now, they're not, presidents aren't going to say that, but they know exactly what they're doing. And, of course, you can't even understand the impeachment of Bill Clinton and why, when they brought the impeachment to the Senate, they said, you know, the House has voted to impeach the president. Why, of course, the head of the Senate, his name was Trent Lott, said, well, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to impeach him. Well, don't you want to hear the evidence? We're not going to impeach him. Why? Well, he didn't tell him, but he's a 33rd degree Mason, and he couldn't come out against the highest ranking demolay in America. Of course they couldn't, but nobody will tell you the influence of these occult organizations at the highest level of our government today. That's why there was no chance at all of impeaching William Jefferson Clinton. But where are you going to hear that? You're not going to hear it elsewhere. Well, you need to get our information. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, or, and better still, why not consider getting the Brotherhood of Darkness special with a book, the video, and then the audio tape for $29.95. If you'd like a free copy of one of our latest newsletters, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd be glad to send it to you. And then go to our website, and you can pull down our newsletters. You can listen to our programs, and this program and many others are archived there. And, of course, it's simply radioliberty.com. Now, your job is to tell other people about our news, about our website, to tell them about our programs, to get them listening, and maybe I can convince them that they have something at stake, because if we lose America, they lose everything. And most people don't want to think about that. They don't want to think about bad things. Nobody wants to think they're going to die. But how would you like to lose America? Because with that goes your freedom and your family and your savings and your future. And believe me, this is at stake today. America is being rapidly bankrupt as we transfer our industries overseas, as we take on this tremendous wealth, as we antagonize the rest of the world. And, of course, people throughout the Muslim world are going to want to attack America. Even the Muslims here will soon be hating America. And I feel we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis unparalleled in the history of our nation. So understand what's going on and then help us warn others. Because we can take America back if there are enough people who care. Do you care? Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our ministers. Pray for revival. Because if the American people don't turn back to God, God will turn against the American people. And lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. And until, of course, tomorrow when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, goodbye. And may the Lord be with you.